This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Biden currently is focused on having expansion of broad coverage, but still wants to maintain the employer-sponsored insurance. President Trump, on the other hand, would like to see a much limited use of Medicaid.
Hello and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. Today's episode is a continuation of our election discussion with Steve Rixon, Senior Government Relations and Public Policy Director at Vizient, and SG2's Bill Woodson and Valinda Rutledge. In this segment, we'll be focusing on two key topics, healthcare insurance coverage and access, and the path forward for value-based care. So the next major topic that I'd like to discuss is access and coverage, keeping in line with the theme here of affordability. What are the key policies that we should be watching that impact insurance coverage and access to healthcare? Bill, let's start with you.
We'll start with the big headline issue, which is the potential repeal of the Affordable Care Act based on what the Supreme Court does. The decision probably isn't due out until the spring of 2021. And at that time, Congress and the new administration or the sitting administration would have to figure out what to do. What's at stake is the 12 million people who've gotten coverage through Medicaid expansion and 11.4 million who are currently getting care through the exchange. In the more immediate term, it's worth talking about Medicaid. And remember, we're all into like a K-shaped recovery, meaning white collar workers and white collar employers are largely doing okay. Lower paid workers, service economy employers are struggling. That will continue well into 2021. And because of a lot of this, all the state budgets are down at least 20%. And remember, the largest expenditure in any state budget is usually Medicaid. So the stress on the Medicaid system going into 2021 and the access that Medicaid affords to the population will come under strain. And therefore, that has issues for how health systems interact with those populations and how they're reimbursed.
Steve, tell us a little bit about your perspective.
That's absolutely the elephant in the room in addressing what's going to happen with the legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act. And with the Supreme Court, it's always a fool's errand to try and guess what they're going to do. Things generally did transcend the traditional party lines in the Supreme Court, as we've seen with the ACA being upheld several times. But how that judgment plays out, it could fundamentally change however the next administration, be it Vice President Biden or continuation of President Trump's administration, it'll fundamentally reshape how they respond to healthcare. If they end up striking the law, President Trump would be put in a position to be more aggressive in trying to reimagine or so-called put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and trying to replace what has been a fundamental underpinning of the healthcare system for the last decade. If Joe Biden were elected, it may be as simple as passing a one-line piece of legislation saying the individual mandate's no longer there. And that would moot the entire proceedings of the Supreme Court. But beyond the ACA, when we look at access and coverage, when you look at what President Trump has been doing throughout his administration, a lot of it's been seeking to find ways to bring forward more affordable healthcare plans, things like association health plans or short-term limited duration healthcare plans. However, from a hospital perspective, in many cases, you could safely consider them junk insurance. I think that's also on the agenda for what's going to happen with the election, is what the future of those healthcare plans is going to look like.
Valinda, how do you see the difference in how these things are approached? And Steve, you covered this a little bit when talking about if a Biden administration comes on, we may see just sort of a passing of a one-line legislation that puts the ACA back in place, but gets rid of the individual mandate. Anything else, particularly with regard to Medicaid funding that you see changing, Valinda, between these two administrations?
Biden currently is focused on having expansion of broad coverage, but still wants to maintain the employer-sponsored insurance. The question is, if they end up coming into the White House, the Senate, and the House, will he have his colleagues way on the left that wants Medicare for all move him out of that sort of moderate stance and starts looking at a broad expansion that looks at a much broader public option than what he is envisioning right now?
Right. And if you take a look at Biden Care, his public option does attempt to address issues of affordability and offer another option for those with employer-sponsored insurance that isn't prohibitively expensive. Just to walk through a few aspects of that plan, it's supposed to be available to all marketplace participants. at least propose to offer premium-free coverage to adults in non-expansion states. And it also pegs subsidies to a gold plan instead of a silver plan, meaning that the subsidies will be higher. In terms of what that means for health systems, it may mean a larger population of people are on a government plan, which we could predict will probably pay less than traditional commercial insurance. On the other hand, though, it is likely to reduce the uninsured rate. It's predicted to bring it down to about 3%, meaning for health systems, that will be a higher level of coverage for the general population.
He would like to see expansion of Medicaid, benefits. President Trump would like to see a much limited use of Medicaid. President Trump has been focused on affordability. He has introduced the short-term skinny plans that people have had a 30% decrease in their premiums when they've signed up for it. Now, the question is, then when you become very sick, you end up being very surprised at how much you end up being financially responsible for. But the premiums are on an average of 30% lower than it was before. So he is focused on affordable premiums, decreasing the Medicaid rolls through a variety of different things like work requirements. And he would also like to see block grants, which also would decrease the amount of individuals on Medicaid. So one's going to be focusing on affordability at the premium level, where the other one is going to be focused on broad coverage, but trying to maintain employer-sponsored insurance, but expanding out Medicaid.
Where cost of coverage is a primary focus, as well as looking at the Medicaid funding approach overall. One thing that I think is a key differentiator between these two administrations, if Biden is elected or President Trump is reelected, is how you handle Medicaid. One of the key things that we have to look at in Medicaid is the Trump administration would be more likely to be active in trying to control those costs and taking more aggressive steps that may put the provider community at risk and reduce an already limited amount of Medicaid funding. I think we all can agree that Medicaid is never going to be fully covering the cost of providing a lot of these services from a hospital perspective. And that could be further stressed by the Trump administration if they continue to maintain a Republican majority in the Senate. One example is the Medicaid fiscal accountability regulation that the Trump administration pushed forward, but then just withdrew in the last couple of weeks. That would take a fairly blunt hammer to a lot of state Medicaid programs and limit their ability to raise matching funds for their programs. If the Trump administration is reelected and assuming the COVID-19 pandemic abates, I think that would be back on the table in the second term of a Trump administration.
So let's shift to value-based care. We continue to hear sort of on both sides that this is something that is coming and it's moving forward. And so it's not so much the what, but the how. What's on the table from a value-based care perspective?
One of the things that has really pushing both the Trump and the Biden platform is that CBO announced about a month ago that the trust fund will be insolvent by 2024. And that's 2 years earlier. That really has both parties very concerned about the actions that they're going to have to take to continue to have it be sustainable. Everyone is aware that we're either going to have to decrease rates to providers or decrease benefits to beneficiaries, which probably will not happen, or move to much more aggressive risk-based models. Because of that, there's a lot of conversation going on at CMMI in terms of what's the next generation of models looking like. Certainly, it will be much more higher risk. And second, many providers, because of their experiences in the COVID-19, they've realized the value of having capitated payments. Many participants in the current models have had conversations with CMS and CMMI about asking for more models that have a capitated payment component in it rather than processing, putting your claims as fee for service and then having a retrospective reconciliation 18 months later. There's a lot of conversation about how to strengthen the current models, how to get more savings out of them, because many of them have been sort of neutral in terms of the financial impact to the trust fund, and how to respond to some of the participants' concerns about moving to more of a capitated models.
Bill, why is this important to health systems? What's the ultimate impact on them?
At the highest level, it's a reminder that over time, CMS wants to shift more and more financial and clinical risk to providers. That doesn't mean providers are going to embrace that. We just recently surveyed a number of SG2 members on this topic, and there's real bifurcation going on, meaning there are those health systems that are sort of moving towards this, either because of market positioning, emphasis on cost and quality, some way to differentiate themselves, and then maybe 40 to 45% resisting and hanging on to fee-for-service for dear life. And at the moment, most health systems are just focused on basic economics, given the dynamics and the volume trends this year. Having said that, there's a lot of interest and passion around the expansion of Medicare Advantage, and that varies by market, but lots of enthusiasm about starting to get more comfortable working under a Medicare Advantage mindset. And yet, from the payer perspective, a couple of weeks ago, United announced its intention to dramatically expand its reach for its Medicare Advantage plans. United currently insures 6.5 million, and they're going to expand their reach into 300 more counties in the U.S. And we'll watch what Humana announces this fall. That's the area that seems to be getting the most passion from providers. Given the financial uncertainty we face this year, we're expecting there to be more interest in capitation, particularly on the primary care side.
So in terms of what that looks like in a Biden versus a Trump administration, are there differences in how those things come to fruition or how they roll out?
Absolutely, Kelly. Many of the people that will probably be in a Biden administration had been in Obama administration previously. What we're hearing is that they're going to be focused on sustaining the current models that we have, expanding out ACOs, potentially taking a look at different types of bundles. Both the Biden and the Trump administration likes mandatory models, such as mandatory bundles. The Obama administration actually had put forward a CV mandatory bundle. And then when Dr. Price came in as the secretary, he stopped it. And yet about a month ago, the Trump administration has implemented two mandatory bundles that will be starting January 1st. One radiation oncology and the other one is an end-stage renal disease one. So both of them, we can expect to see more mandatory models. The difference in the Trump versus the Biden administration is the Trump administration really are very interested in more advanced models like direct contracting, particularly the geographic one that they've been discussing for the last few years. They're looking for providers to take higher risk. They're looking for more advanced providers to take a sort of a global risk and maybe sub-cap it with providers that may not be comfortable with that degree of risk, but you have somebody that's taking that global risk and then entering into another type of contract. The other difference is the Trump administration seems to feel very comfortable in facilitating disruptors into the market. Their philosophy is much more, we don't see the current providers, both from a physician and a health system point of view, moving as fast as we feel that they need to be into risk-based contracts. So we're going to allow disruptors in the market to accelerate that movement. They're very focused in terms of home care. They recently changed some of the regulations for remote patient monitoring, telehealth to allow some of that to happen. And as Bill has said, site neutral. They're really focused on how do they allow disruptors into the industry. They're focused on high areas of care, like the radiation oncology, the end-stage renal disease. They're actually looking at the areas that have the high cost and going after it. Where the Biden administration is going to be much focused on a much broader population, looking at health inequalities and looking at how to improve healthcare status as an entire population. We're going to see two different perspectives as they move forward in launching these different models. The Trump administration is much more focused on deregulation. Their patients over paperwork initiative has yielded an incredible changes in regulations in the last 3.5 years.
The only thing I would add to what she said is that we also have to go back to the Supreme Court case, where if the court rules and strikes the entirety of the ACA, the CMMI demonstration authority goes away completely. And so that's one thing that's out there to consider. I don't expect that's likely. And even if the Supreme Court did get rid of CMMI, it would almost certainly be slapped back into place by a bipartisan majority in Congress with little question in my mind. There has been a growing and bipartisan interest in putting additional guardrails around CMMI's authority to implement some of these programs and move forward on a mandatory basis on the scale that we've seen.
Steve, just a quick follow-up question there. In terms of the guardrails for CMMI, is that something that the Trump administration wants to put in place or the Biden administration, or is that a bipartisan issue?
I don't know that either administration necessarily would pursue that approach, but I think there is an interest in Congress in kind of reclaiming some of their authority to actually weigh in on these models. And there is bipartisan legislation out there. I don't have the bill number off the top of my head. Belinda mentioned the radiation oncology model and the ESRD model, as well as some of the models that the Obama administration pursued that were fairly controversial in Congress, where I think Congress would like to have a more aggressive role in stepping in when they feel CMMI oversteps their bounds.
So let's wrap up with some of the things that we think maybe won't change at all, regardless of who's elected. What are the constants that we're going to be seeing?
Number one, the Medicare Trust Fund insolvency in 2024. Both parties are going to have a reprieve for 2021, and that will be good because they'll be able to focus on the economic health of our country and the resolution of COVID, hopefully. But in 2022, both parties are going to have to make some hard decisions. And it will be very invaluable to have health systems through Steve and his team's assistance to be able to articulate what is needed and what are some of the ideas out there that would further the movement to value and help the Medicare Trust Fund, but doesn't allow a deterioration of the hospitals as the cornerstone of care in this country. Second, I think site neutral. We're going to see a strong movement to non-traditional settings. We're going to see a lot more virtual health. The Biden administration platform has said that they would like to see more rural broadband expansion to allow more virtual health out in the community. And at SG2, we have a lot of resources on that. Kelly, we've had a couple of podcasts on telehealth and virtual health and what that means for a strategic direction of the health system. And then final was changes in Medicaid. Medicaid is overall going to be in a crisis because of the state budget. Many of the states are really hurting financially. We're hoping that there will be a stimulus package come through soon that will help us stabilize some of the states. But with this crisis, something's going to have to happen to Medicaid. We're going to see major changes in Medicaid going forward. Those three things we're going to see regardless of who is elected.
The only other element that's probably going to continue to move forward, regardless of who's elected in November, is price transparency. We've seen kind of the Trump administration really push aggressively in this space to a point where it's been one of their priorities throughout their administration to really expand it. From an operational perspective, that does have a significant impact on hospitals who are still trying to figure out how to move forward under this model. I don't believe that the Biden administration is going to really step back from that approach, because once the sheet is pulled back and we kind of see where these prices are, it's going to open a lot of different doors. I don't think there's a real interest in doing that from the Biden administration as well. There are still questions about whether this is going to be allowed to move forward from a legal standpoint. And then I'd also be remiss if I didn't go back to this one point. The authority for that price transparency order from the Trump administration also gleaned from the Affordable Care Act. If the Supreme Court acted on that, that authority would go away. So that might make the legal challenge a little more interesting on that approach. But by and large, they're going to be very similar in how they approach many of these issues.
And given those economic realities, Bill, what are some of the can't lose strategies that health systems should pursue regardless of the election outcome?
It's great that we're not talking about the election anymore, because I'm already exhausted by it, Kelly. One of the things we're recommending to our members right now, and they're embracing this themselves, is moving to shorter term planning cycles, given the amount of uncertainty in the economy right now and in the marketplace, changing the mindset of how you plan instead of being over 18 months or several years, moving into monthly or quarterly and being able to pivot quickly should the need arise. And that also means doing scenario planning, given some of the things we've talked about today. Underneath that, the strategic can't misses are the things that are on everyone's list right now. So that's doubling down on digital and virtual health, which links directly to creating a more seamless or frictionless patient experience. That plays out nicely for market share. That's also linked to a focus on network integrity. And by that term, I mean keeping patients in your system who might otherwise be leaking out to other markets or other providers. But that's also an important way to focus on continuity of care and providing a better healthcare product overall, which might get you to focus on the affordability and total cost of care that needs to be on the list of every system. And we understand that the economics in each market market are a bit different. Two more issues will be the workforce. So not only investing in your workforce, but treating it as a strategic issue. I think those systems with kind of the most robust workforce, the most stable workforce, who are able to ride out the economics right now and invest in them, build up all kinds of goodwill and potential to move market share. And then my last one is, one of the things we've had to learn this year somewhat painfully is that the industry is overly reliant on acute care and specifically procedures. So I think systems taking the time to consider revenue diversification or how you move away from a revenue and margin model that's entirely dependent on a handful of profitable procedures is going to serve you well, regardless of what plays out over the next couple of years in whatever administration we're talking about.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up. Thank you all for joining me today. If you like what you're hearing, please also listen and subscribe to our colleague, Dr. Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. Tom discusses key healthcare trends through the clinical leadership lens. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening and stay healthy.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.